You're listening to episode number 64 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where it's all about smart, efficient training so you can crush your cycling goals. And now, your host, Coach Rob Manning.
All right, welcome to episode number 64 of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, where we make real science real simple. I'm your host, of course, Coach Rob, and I have a great show for you today, where we are going to actually be discussing beginner cyclist training mistakes. Mistakes that are typically made by people who are new to the sport or relatively new to the sport will determine, and I'll talk about what I consider a beginner to the sport. But these things are also made very frequently by people who are long-term members of the sport, long-term cyclists, long-term people who are training. So there's a little bit of something in here for everybody, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. First, I have a couple of announcements that I'd like to go through here. Of course, as always, the website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle, and of course, my online training plan store is available at tailwind-coaching.com, and the podcast show notes for this particular episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast can be found at tailwind-coaching.com/64. That's the number 64. Visit the online training plan store over at tailwind-coaching.com for complete training solutions for all of your major season goals, grand fondos, races, rides, and of course, general fitness. And of course, don't forget to take advantage of my training plan support option to get yourself a coach for a small percentage of what it would normally cost. The idea here, you buy an off-the-shelf training plan from my downloadable store, select the training plan option, the training plan support option, and I coach you through that training plan and I help you adapt it to your goals, move workouts around, add workouts, add strength training, add nutritional support, etc., etc. All of that for $30 per month. Now, bear in mind that that's going to be a little bit limited. It's going to be not going to be the same as a one-on-one coaching experience, but for $30 a month plus the cost of a training plan. So imagine you're doing a base plan. Base plan's going to be very popular here soon in the Northeast, Northern Hemisphere, as we move into winter. So for $90, you get yourself a coach and a training plan for an extra $30 after that. And of course, that is $120 for 3 months of coaching without paying for one-on-one support. Of course, one-on-one support, if you're interested in that, I have a couple of spots available. And that is full training plan support, customized training plans, customized nutrition recommendations, recovery recommendations, pretty much anything you can name is what you're getting offered in a one-on-one support. Do me a favor, head on over to the site. And if you're heading on over to the site to check out those training plans or to check out the show notes, do me a favor, head on over to iTunes, rate this podcast 5 stars. If you like it, if you don't like it, you know, rate it 1 star, whatever you like. But the 5-star rating helps me move the podcast up the iTunes ranks, lets me reach more people, and lets me help more people enjoy their cycling a little bit more. As a compliment to the podcast and the training plans, and of course the episode show notes receptacle, you can head on over to the Tailwind Coaching newsletter and sign up there, tailwind-coaching.com/sign-up. Share it with your friends. You'll get free coaching advice, workouts, fitness information, special offers, and all of my top secret tips delivered right into your inbox. And you don't usually hear from me more than once or twice a month, typically about twice a month. So keep that in mind as well. Share it with your friends. Help them get a little bit stronger, faster, and enjoy their cycling a little bit more as well. And if you do head on over to the site to check out the blog, the show notes, or to rate the podcast on iTunes, you can visit any of my sponsors. They all contribute a few pennies to hosting and bandwidth costs when you click through those links and purchase from them. And of course, again, Road ID, able to speak for you when you are not, the Sufferfest, indoor training workouts with UCI licensed footage, US Wellness Meats for hormone-free grass-fed goodness in terms of protein, the Bulletproof Exec for biohacking and marginal gains needs, my Amazon store, which has a number of my recommended training devices, Garmin devices, helmets, things like that. If you can't find it at your local bike shop, you can always find it on my Amazon store. And of course, Exos Nutrition for high-quality nutritional supplements designed for health, well-being, and improved performance. If you do need to get hold of me, contact me, coachrobdc@gmail.com, or follow me by clicking any of the icons in the upper right-hand corner of the website. And of course, you can always post questions on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. On the website, there's a link for that, and the Tailwind Coaching forums on the website as well. So, and of course, as always, don't forget there is a discount code at the end of the podcast show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/64. Okay, with all of that taken care of, let's get into the meat and potatoes of today's show, which, as I mentioned earlier, is going to be beginner cyclist training mistakes. All right, beginner cyclist training mistakes. And again, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, these are not just things that beginners do or mistakes that beginners make. These are mistakes that typically beginners make, but I've essentially seen everybody from a couple of weeks on the bike beginner to someone who's been training for 10 years. I've seen them actually make some of these mistakes. So there is something in here for a little, you know, for everybody, and it's worth paying a little bit of attention to some of these. Question: are you going to make these mistakes yourself? And of course, change those mistakes into positives after I get some of my advice here. But first of all, I'm going to talk about what exactly is a beginner. Now, a lot of people consider a beginner to be simply somebody who is new at something. And that's inherently true. A beginner is generally somebody who is new at something. In the case of cycling, however, I'm going to say that a beginner is not exactly just somebody who's jumped on a bike this year and started riding. I know a number of people who have ridden bikes for a long time. However, they have really not started to realize their potential, or they haven't really begun training or begun attempting to improve their fitness until recently. So in that respect, somebody who may have ridden a bike casually for 3, 5, 10, 15 years may still be considered a beginner when it comes to training and building fitness. So for the purposes of this podcast, for the purposes of what I'm going to discuss, I'm going to consider a beginner cyclist as someone who has 3 years or less of experience training on a bike. Not just riding on a bike, but training on a bike. And the reason I'm going to say that again is because beginners may have ridden casually for any number of years, but for all intents and purposes, you really are a beginner when you undergo your first season of training, as of using cycling as your primary sport. Many, many people are well, truly advanced runners, very advanced CrossFitters, for example, advanced swimmers even, could be even advanced triathletes. I really consider a beginner to be somebody who has just truly started riding a bike, and that tends to continue on for about 3 years. It generally takes the body around 2 to 3 years to really develop some muscle memory patterns, some neurological patterns, some cardiac fitness patterns. It takes a few years to really develop some aerobic base of fitness that, you know, doesn't disappear over the couple of weeks you take off in the off season. We'll get to that a little bit later as one of the very common mistakes that beginners and experienced riders, of course, all together make. but again, for the purposes of a beginner is someone who has 3 years or less experience really, really training on a bike or riding a bike as their primary sport. And these beginners, with their 3 years or less of riding experience, tend to have typically not realized their fitness potential yet. What exactly does this mean? I mean, you're sitting there going, what do you mean? They haven't realized their fitness potential. Typically, a beginner has a limitless amount of improvement. And I say limitless, even though it's truly very limited. I say limitless because they see significant improvement from season start to season end. You hear the stories about the guy who he picks up a bike and suddenly he goes out and he rides for 3 months and suddenly he has, you know, a 25% improvement in his speed. He goes from 12 mile per hour rides to 16 mile an hour rides. He goes from riding, you know, 20 miles in a ride to riding 60 miles in a ride, or from riding 1,000 feet of climbing in a ride to riding 3,000 or 4,000 feet of climbing per ride. So typically somebody who sees a significant improvement from just going out and riding, the old adage of just put in some more miles and you'll get better, that actually really does apply to a beginner. I mean, it really does apply to a beginner. And that's typically what beginners do. They're told, go out, ride your bike more, and you will get faster. And that's 100% true. They typically focus more on increasing their mileage than increasing any of their skills or any of their fundamental base fitness. Beginners really only start focusing on this really when they become intermediate or advanced riders. Later on the road when they really stop improving from just riding. I can't tell you how many people come to me and they say, listen, you know, coach, I've ridden a bike for the past couple of years and I was doing really, really great. I was putting on some really awesome mileage and I was doing 200 miles a week. I was losing weight really fast. My average speed was going up. I was able to climb a lot better. I was riding with groups and, you know, after like 3 years of that, I just stop. I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck. I can't get any improvement anymore. And I ride more miles. I rode 250 miles a week for the last 10 weeks and I haven't gotten anywhere. That's the time when a beginner typically becomes an intermediate or advanced cyclist. Typically an intermediate cyclist. You can become an advanced cyclist that fast. You really have to work hard at it. But again, beginners, taking a step back, can really, really improve through the mileage, the ride more miles type of paradigm. They can improve without a specific training plan designed for them. But I will point out that they do tend to improve faster when they're using a structured program, and they won't form those bad habits that they might otherwise form if they're not following any kind of plan. And like I said, they absolutely will hit a point where they stop improving with the quote, same old, end quote, riding techniques. The go out and ride a few more miles and you'll notice the fitness improve. And that's true to a point, like I said, with beginners, but as you progress, that will stop being true. So now that you know what a beginner is, now you can determine, am I being lumped in this beginner category? And I'm not trying to be derogatory about it. It's simply a fact of beginners need to train a little bit different than your average intermediate or advanced cyclist. That's just the way it is. The intermediate cyclist, the advanced cyclist, really has to follow a specific training plan and some specific training functions in order to really improve themselves. Like I said, the beginner doesn't have that issue, and that's really part of the magic of being a beginner cyclist. I mean, think about that. When you were a beginner, when you were first riding a bike, even if you're thinking back to your childhood, how cool was it when week by week you could feel yourself getting stronger? You could see yourself getting stronger. That's a really awesome thing. It's a really motivational thing. It's a really wonderful thing. And that can lead to some really typical training mistakes. So if you are a beginner, pay close attention to these kind of things and see if you can sort of nip it in the bud before it becomes an issue. If you're not a beginner, if you're an advanced guy or an intermediate cyclist, pay attention too, because you may be making some of these mistakes as well. And some of these training mistakes could be very, very easily fixed without a whole lot of work. And it could really, really improve your cycling fitness and your ability to ride powerfully. All right, so let's get into what are some beginner training mistakes. What are some of these mistakes that beginners make, that intermediate cyclists make, that advanced cyclists make? Well, we're going to break this down here into mistakes made during the season and mistakes made during the off season. Or if you look at some of my podcasts, I consider it the not so off season, and you can take a look at my not so off season podcast if you want a little bit more information about that. But in any case, mistakes made during the season. Here's one. This is one that I've seen so many times. It's absolutely unbelievable how often I see this one mistake made. And it can be, really this mistake can be extrapolated from one little segment of a ride all the way out to an entire ride. It doesn't have to be just one part of a ride. It can be an entire ride as well. And that simple mistake is simply going out too hard. Okay? I partly, and this is something I have to sidebar here about, and I have to sidebar about the fact that Strava really seems to have a, you know, caused this to be a major, major problem. Strava, as you know, is a social media type training application. It's found on iPhone, it's found on Android, it has a website. You can record your data with a Garmin device, you can upload it to the Strava website, and basically, you're virtually racing with people. Maybe not people that are anywhere around you. Maybe people that rode the same road a year ago. But you are virtually racing with people during each and every single ride that you record with a Garmin or with their iPhone or Android app. And personally, I believe that that mentality, that always watched mentality, that I need to be faster than all of my friends every time I go out, really has contributed to this number one training mistake that people have made. And of course, like I said, that's going out way too hard. Typically, if we're going to talk about this from from any standpoint, whether it's just a particular part of a ride, whether it's a climb, whether it's an entire ride, the main issue you have here is, especially for a beginner who isn't familiar with pacing themselves, with their energy reserves, with how they should hide in a group, with how hard the group is working, they tend to start out way too hard. There's a perfect example of this. Take any local group ride, take any local shop ride, take any race. First time you hit the first climb, there's always some knucklehead who, despite all of the downshifting and everybody shifting from the big ring to the little ring, you know, and you hear cassette shifting in the back, there's always some knucklehead who shoots out of the group early on and attacks the group on whatever kind of climb it is. It could be 2 minutes, it could be 10 minutes, it could be an hour. Pretty much what happens in that case, that particular guy that goes out, that knucklehead that shoots off the front of the group there, they're the guy that's going to run out of steam before they get to the top of the climb, and they're going to be caught, and very frequently passed. That's a real microcosm of the going out too hard mistake that a lot of cyclists make. But if you want to talk about it from the standpoint of going out too hard too early in a ride, it's a little bit different story, but it generally has the same results. So you go out too hard. Maybe you're with a group that's a little bit faster than you, or you're racing, and the nerves have gotten the better of you, and the ego gets the better of you, and you go out really hard and really fast. What you end up doing, you end up burning up a lot of anaerobic fuel before you really warm yourself up. All right, your leg speed mechanics are really poor. Your muscles are not warmed up. Your aerobic system has not been really primed and is not operating entirely efficiently. Human beings, physiologically, are not designed to go from 0 to 60 and stay at 60 for a long period of time without some kind of warm-up. And that is why we're blessed with a really nice anaerobic energy system, so that that can get us through until our aerobic system sort of kicks in. And you'll know these kind of people. These are the guys that are really, really, really strong for the first half of the ride, and they pretty much end up with the needle on empty by the midpoint of any kind of ride. These are the guys that need to stop and refuel often. They're always stuffing their face with a bar, with a gel. They're always sucking on a water bottle full of Gatorade or whatever. They're really always operating at an energy deficit because they've burned up so much energy in the first half of the ride. Now they're just completely cooked for the rest of the ride. They're empty. They're literally empty. They're a case of a car that is constantly being fed pints of gasoline instead of gallons at a gas station. You know, there's a simple, very, very simple cure for this, actually, though. Very simply, proper pre-ride fueling. Whether or not you're fat adapted, whether or not you're doing some adaptation training, you're doing some fasted training, it doesn't matter. The idea is to have a sufficient warm-up, be properly pre-ride fueled, and of course for a warm-up, you want to be doing things that are going to stimulate your aerobic system to operate more efficiently and bring it up to speed quickly. That's going to be higher leg speed type drills and work, minimal pedal tension, and you're going to want to progressively add some tension to your pedals as you start to warm up. You really don't want to be stomping on those pedals and mashing out a lot of power early on, because you will pay for it later. All right. Energy deficit, it's like you rob Peter to pay Paul. So you have to work hard to stay with the group in the beginning. You won't stay with them by the end. If you're a little bit smarter, you sit in the draft, you can spend a little less energy staying with that group. You'll have a little bit left in the tank later on. Okay. it's also worth noting, if you're one of the guys that goes out way too hard, simply adjust your pacing. What feels hard to you at the beginning of a ride will feel impossible to you by the end of the ride. So ask yourself 5 minutes in, is this hard? And if the answer is yes, back off. Back off until you're like, okay, I can do this for a while. All right. Ideally, if you want to talk functional threshold numbers, you really should be operating somewhere in the neighborhood of your sweet spot. Okay. You can go back to my previous podcast, tailwind-coaching.com/63, and you can get a really good explanation of what sweet spot is. You can get an explanation of how to use it, how to get more of it, and how to train it in that podcast. But nonetheless, that first half of your ride should be averaging sweet spot. That sweet spot level, that 91% of functional threshold. That I can do this pretty much all day as long as I've got the right fuel. If you find yourself way above that, you're going to burn out halfway through the ride, and you're going to be one of those guys that, of course, went out too hard. Don't make that first training mistake. All right, second mistake here. Being afraid of riding with those who are better than you. All right, now this one is interesting. And this one really does apply to beginners, but it also applies to more advanced people as well. As human beings, we have an ego to uphold. The fact that we are the best, we are the strongest, we are the fastest, we are the best. We rule. And when somebody comes along who's better than us, stronger than us, faster than us, we feel a little bit threatened by that. Nod your head yes, because I know this happens. I see it every time on a group ride when it's basically said, well, we're going to be casual today. There's no such thing as casual when you get a bunch of guys together. Okay, it becomes, pardon the pun, but it becomes a dick measuring contest. That's essentially what it becomes. However, just because somebody is better than you, they're faster than you, they're stronger than you, they climb better than you, don't be afraid to ride with them. Because riding with someone who is better forces you to ride up to their level. Maybe they ride usually 2 miles faster per hour than you. All right, they average 20 miles an hour, where you only average 18 miles an hour for a similar loop. All right, riding with them. Even if you're riding in their slipstream, you're riding in their draft, hiding in that draft, you're going to have to fight to stay on that wheel. All right? And because you're in that draft and you can save maybe up to 30% of the energy you normally would, you can work harder and you can stick on that wheel. Surprise, surprise, that gives you both a mental boost. Wow, I stayed with a guy who was doing 20 miles an hour. Sure. Granted, you didn't put any work in, per se, but you did stay with a guy who was pulling 20 miles an hour. That's pretty damn good. You raised your average by 2 miles an hour. All by being smart and not being afraid of riding with someone who's better than you. And of course, if you get dropped by that guy who's better than you, maybe you're a cat, you know, cat three, and you're riding with a domestic pro. You know, you're a cat three guy, and you see Ted King go riding by, and you decide to slip into his draft a little bit. Yeah, you're probably going to get dropped. But you know what? Psychologically, you did hang on with him for a little while. And the next time, you'll work harder to hang on to him. And of course, I'm going to point out that the amount of time you did hang on to him was probably a hell of a lot harder than you were going to have gone. That's an interesting grammatical phrase. Than you would have ridden had you ridden alone. So that's also worth noting, that bleeding from the eyeballs to hang on to somebody who's that much better than you is motivational in the fact that you don't want to get dropped. And the amount of time that you're on that wheel that you aren't dropped, you're typically going to be working harder than you would solo. So keep that in mind as well. There's also a benefit of working with someone who's better than you in that respect. It's kind of like a two-person motor pacing operation, actually. And it's really, really cool when you actually put aside your ego and your fears, and you actually go out and give it a shot. Now, if you're going to fix this and you're really afraid to ride with people, or people are just really so far above you that you really can't ride with them, again, check out my previous podcast on sweet spot training. Get a little bit more in terms of aerobic conditioning, aerobic adaptation, so that you really, really, really can try to hold on to that wheel. So that's that right there is the mistake, the training mistake, being afraid to ride with those who are better than you. Up next, we got a good one that's near and dear to my heart, especially as fall is set in here in the Northeast, and that is being afraid of riding off-road. Now, this is an interesting one. When I say being afraid of riding off-road, I'm not talking about, you know, a roadie or a road racer who's afraid to jump on a mountain bike. It's not what I mean at all. What I'm saying is, I'm talking about the guys who are afraid of turning down a dirt or gravel road for various number of excuses. Well, you know, it might chip the paint on my bike. Well, my tires aren't cut out for that. They're not big enough. Well, I really don't want to get dusty today. Well, my bike isn't strong enough to handle that. My wheels aren't strong enough to... Oh, cut the bullshit. Pardon the language, but I've heard the excuses way too many times, and really and truly, there is absolutely no reason why beginners, intermediates, advanced, it doesn't matter. There is no earthly reason why you should be afraid to ride your bike off-road. There's no reason why. Folks, most of you are riding bikes that are ridden by the professional peloton. The cycling industry as it stands nowadays, unless you're in triathlons, of course, but triathlon has completely different rules. But if you're in any kind of cycling world, any bike that is available to you has to pass muster with the UCI. And the UCI is, of course, the governing body of cycling and racing in Europe and professional cycling. The bike you've got underneath you is basically the same bike that guys have underneath them when they're racing Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders, or Paris-Roubaix, or a couple of years ago, Tour of the Battenkill. The guys who were racing the Pro-Am were racing basically the same bikes that you would have ridden. And there are thousands of people that race off-road events, dirt road events, the Dirty Kanza, the D2R2 up in Massachusetts, the Vermont Six Gap, which actually has unpaved roads on it. Of course, I mentioned Tour of the Battenkill, the Gran Fondo up there. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of people that ride their road bikes on dirt and gravel roads, myself included. In fact, I love riding on dirt and gravel roads. And there's no fear of anything breaking or falling apart or rattling apart or anything else. So please stop using it as an excuse to get over your fear. Just go do it. Why is it so good for you? Riding off-road, or I'm going to call it off-road in this case, because technically, even though it is a road, it is unpaved. Riding these dirt roads, riding these gravel roads, really, really, really builds your handling skills. Okay. It builds your handling skills and it builds confidence on uneven surfaces. I can't tell you how many roads around my general area at this time of the season, you know, I'm recording on October 7th. I can't tell you how many roads around this area have been chip sealed. For those of you who aren't familiar with chip seal, it's basically they put a layer of oil and tar down on the road and then they throw gravel on top of it and then they run over it. And that helps to seal the road surface before the winter. Imagine coming around a corner and hitting a 2 or 3 inch deep pile of gravel. If you don't have the proper handling skills or the proper skills on uneven surfaces and know what to do, you're going down. You're going down. I've seen it happen. It's not pretty. You're picking gravel out of your arms, you're out of your legs, your knees, you know, there's jersey's all torn up, your shorts are all torn up. Basically, you're a bloody meat-hooked mess, and yeah, it's just not cool. It's not pretty. So, riding off-road, riding those dirt roads, those gravel roads, those chip-sealed roads, really builds your handling skills. It forces you to pick smooth, safe lines. It forces you to have confidence in your bike's stability and build handling skills and confidence in your ability to handle rough surfaces. Additionally, one of the best places to develop muscular endurance. In fact, today's October 7th. I'm out of the office today. I have a day off. I went out and I rode dirt roads. I rode, it was a short ride because let me get back in and do a podcast for you guys. So I did about 22 miles. And for the most part, a lot of those roads, probably about 6 or 7 miles of those roads, were dirt roads. Dirt roads with really low cadence, really high pedal tension. So it's one of the best places to build muscular endurance. It's one of the best places to build pedal force techniques. It's the best place to work on standing drills, because if you're not real smooth with your pedal stroke, the rear wheel will just spin out from underneath you and you'll come to a screeching halt. You get an increased amount of training stress compared to a similar amount of time on a paved road. So you almost double down on your training value. Folks, riding dirt roads is phenomenal. It is one of the best training tips I can give you. And you can always check out my post on tailwind-coaching.com. Check out the episode show notes here, tailwind-coaching.com/64. There's a link to one of my oldest articles, and it's actually one of my most popular articles. It's Dirt Road Riding Tips, and that is a really, really great read for some of the tips you need to safely ride these roads. And I encourage you, go out and ride these roads. Don't make the training mistake that so many people do and say, I don't want to ride these. I'm afraid of riding these. My bike can't handle it. My wheels can't. No, they can handle it. You're the one that can't handle it. And if I sound like I'm talking down to you, I'm not intending to talk down to you. It's just a simple fact of there's a ton of training adaptation out there if people wouldn't be afraid to use it. All right, that's enough on my soapbox about dirt roads. Let's move on to the next one. The next big training mistake that beginners make, and actually a lot of people make, very few people get this until they really reach the sort of upper echelons of training and cycling, and that is not using momentum to their advantage. Folks, it goes without saying that all of cycling is all about momentum. Once you have it, you need to keep it at all costs, because it's a whole lot cheaper from an energy expenditure standpoint to keep the momentum you have than to regain lost momentum. I'm going to say that again. Once you have momentum, you need to keep it, because from an energy expenditure cost, it is a whole lot cheaper to keep what you have than to regain it when it's lost. And if you really want an example of this, here's an experiment for you. Go out, find yourself a hill that takes you maybe 10 seconds to climb. I'm talking about a roller, something that's got a little bit of a pitch, maybe 5-6%, 10 seconds to climb, you know, something you could easily get out of the saddle and power over and down the other side. I want you to take a couple of passes at it. the first couple times, ride it hard. Come ripping into the bottom of that little roller, and I want you to stand up, and I want you to sprint over the top and get rolling down the other side. And I want you to check the time that it takes you to actually complete that little 10-second or so climb. It might only be 100 meters, 150 meters worth of climbing, worth of horizontal distance, not even vertical distance, horizontal distance. You know, it might be a tenth of a mile that you actually ride. So do it a couple of times, attack that thing, see how long it takes you. Now, ride into that climb and just sit there and start shifting down. Stay in the saddle, shift down, keep your cadence comfortable, keep your legs comfortable, don't really push it, and see how much slower you are. All right, that's your second pass. Maybe do that two or three times. Third time, go into that climb just like you did for the second pass. Stay seated. Let your cadence come down, you know. Shift to easier gears. Halfway up that thing, stand up and try to power over. Now see how much power you need. See how much energy you need to expend to get back to the original momentum that you had at the bottom of the climb. I would wager you actually spend more energy trying to reaccelerate than you would if you just powered over the top and cruised down the other side. I would bet money on it. All right, this comes from the idea of do not stop on the climbs. Don't slow so much in the corners. All right, this is the problem I see with a lot of beginner cyclists, even a lot of intermediate cyclists. They don't know how to use their momentum. All right, they use the brakes way too much. Way too much. Brakes are really the devil, okay? And after having crashed out of a race this spring, I can tell you, brakes are the devil. They're probably the worst possible thing ever invented. They just cause more problems than they're worth. New riders, beginner riders, even intermediate riders, and a lot of advanced riders tend to rely on the brakes too much. They slow too much coming into corners. They stop, or they lose momentum on climbs, hoping to get a moment of respite, only to realize that, oh, geez, now that I slowed, I got to get back up to speed, and oh man, that takes a lot of work to get back up there. So yeah, maybe I got 2 seconds of rest, but now I've got 10 more seconds of harder work just to get back up to speed. There's a couple of things here you can take a look at. If you're looking at the episode show notes, it'll have a mention of Tailwind Coaching podcast number 57. All right, on cornering. It's a video podcast. Take a look at that. There's also a link to an article I wrote a long while back about rolling your climbs. This is how to maintain momentum over the top of a climb. And let me tell you, rolling climbs will change the way you ride a bike. Beginners, listen to me. This is a key point. Rolling your climbs will change the way you ride a bike. When you realize you can pop right over the... Sorry about that. I just whacked my microphone. When you realize you can actually... Swinging my hands around like I'm talking Italian here. When you realize you can actually roll over the top of a climb, you can rip up a climb and then right down the other side, you can maintain all that momentum. You realize, man, my average speed for this ride just went up, crazy up. I don't feel like I worked any harder. You didn't. The only thing you really worked harder at was keeping your momentum, and that's such a key. Again, I have to say it again, it's such a key to improving as a cyclist. All right, so there's the major training mistake of not using momentum. Those are a couple of things that I tend to see out of beginners, intermediates, even advanced cyclists during the actual season. Now, we're going to get into the dreaded off season, the season that the Northern Hemisphere is just entering right now. All right, as I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, if you want to take a look at the episode show notes, there is a link to my not-so-off-season podcast, and that will tell you why I don't consider off-season to be such a good descriptor of our time off the bike. But let's get into some of the training mistakes that I see people make in the off-season. And the number one mistake that I see people making is not taking the right amount of time off, okay? They either take way too much time off, or they don't take enough time off. But the first thing that I'm going to talk about, we're going to talk about taking too much time off. All too often for beginners, and this tends to happen, especially if a beginner cyclist doesn't have a way to ride indoors. I know a number of beginners that don't actually have an indoor trainer or set of rollers. I don't know many beginner cyclists that have a set of rollers to begin with, let alone beginner cyclists who have a trainer. Okay, so they tend to stop training during the winter months because they don't have the capacity to do so. And that's a real, real huge training mistake and a real easy way to damage your fitness really fast. There are some studies out there that show that stopping for a couple of weeks, you start to lose your high-end fitness. And I can attest to that after, being basically out of commission for 4.5 weeks with some multiple broken bones this spring. You know, after 4.5 weeks getting back on the bike, get back on the trainer, realizing that I had no high-end fitness at all, absolutely nothing. And of course, the second part of what I'm about to discuss here is after about a month, you start to lose some aerobic adaptations as well. You start to lose that plasma expansion, that plasma volume expansion. You tend to lose some of those hematocrit and hemoglobin adaptations that you built up since the beginning of the season. And many, many beginners that I see take more than that month off. Sometimes they'll take 2 or 3 months off. You know, they'll stop riding right around Thanksgiving, maybe, when the snow starts to fly, and they won't start riding again until February, or maybe even March. And at that point, you're basically starting from square one. And it's worth noting that that off-season time that they skipped and they sat on the couch or, you know, they're drinking beer or whatever they're doing, they're losing the fitness gains that they worked so hard to get during the previous season. And this is the other part of, you know, being a beginner that I tend to see quite often. I tend to see a lot of people who, they tend to improve during a season. They regress significantly during the off season because they're not riding, they're not training, they're not doing anything, and then they progress again during the season. It gives you this illusion that, wow, I'm getting better, but really you're just reaching the same standard you were at. So take, you know, keep that in mind as well. That could be possibly what's happening to you if this sounds like you. How do you really fix this too little training or taking too much time off during the winter? I mean, there's a couple of ways to do this. You can always take a couple of weeks of no activity and then return to cross training. Some weightlifting, if people are really into going to the gym, taking some kettlebell classes are a great way to do this. Some yoga is a wonderful way to keep your fitness and keep some kind of flexibility and physiological adaptation in there. Kettlebell training, like I said, is a wonderful way to do that as well. So after you take a couple of weeks of no activity, you return to some cross training, some weightlifting, some classes, some indoor classes, maybe some spin classes. I'm not a huge fan of spin by any matter of means, but if that's the only route that you have to maintain your fitness over the winter, go ahead and grab it. Do it, man. It's a good thing for you. But once you've, you know, taken some time, maybe a month of cross training, you can get back to some light riding and then really get back to training in earnest after a month and a half, 2 months. And that would be basically the onset of your base phase, your base building phase, where you're really focusing on, you know, your fundamental cycling techniques. Now, on the converse side, people who take too little rest, this could be a beginner mistake that I see sometimes, especially if you have a beginner who's really, really enthusiastic and all they want to do is ride, ride, ride. I want to ride my bike. Gotta ride. These are the guys that will go out and they'll buy all kinds of winter kit and you'll see them out in, you know, 20 degrees, you know, they're 30 below with a wind chill, you know, and they're wearing basically a freaking dry suit, dive suit kind of deal. And they're doing like 75 miles per ride, you know, of this slow zone two stuff. These are the beginners that tend to train too much and they take too little rest. Some advanced riders and intermediate riders also take too little rest. They're afraid to take some time off. And again, they're afraid to take some time off because they take 2 weeks off and they see that loss of their high-end fitness and they suddenly think, oh man, I lost all this fitness that I had. I'm gonna be a has-been real soon. I gotta get back on the bike. Now, slow your roll, man. It's okay. It's okay to take some time off. You can check out my podcast on Am I Overtraining? Okay? That's a great resource for you. But the short explanation here is your body needs some time to rest, some time to relax, and some time to rebuild. It's also the perfect time to swap or change up the physiological training stimulus that you're providing your body. When you simply do the same thing over and over and over again, your body gets good at it. Your body is smarter than you give it credit for. That's the bottom line here. It will get good at what you're asking it to do. It will become efficient at what you're asking it to do. And in that case, it doesn't have to improve more. So by changing the stimulus that you're offering your body, it will be forced to adapt and change further. This is why strength training, cross training, kettlebells, yoga, spin, all those kind of things are really such great modalities during the winter, because it switches up the training stimulus that your body's getting and it forces your body to start adapting again. Right? So that's the too much or too little time off during your off season. The next thing here, and I alluded to this a little bit just a moment ago, and that is focusing only on your cycling fitness. Folks, the off season is the time for you to build a significant foundational base of fitness. And I have discussed this at length in many, many other podcasts. You can check out my Strength Training for Cyclists Part 1 and Part 2. You can check out my Sweet Spot Training podcast. But the functional base of fitness, and you can even check out my Effective Off-Season Training podcast for that matter. But the point here is functional base of fitness. That is the real key to an off season, and that functional base of fitness between strength work, all right, work in the gym, some weights, some kettlebells, some functional strength, some core work. All right, I'm not talking about your sit-ups. Your sit-ups aren't going to do anything for your cycling. I'm talking about activating your core, your transverse abdominis, your multifidus, your pelvic floor. These three groups of muscles, these are your spinal stabilizers and your core. All right. Combine that with some of the effects of your obliques, some of the what's called the fascial slings in your body, and you understand why. If you have a weak core, you will break down. Your body will break down. Your body will fail, and you will stop improving. So focusing only on cycling-specific fitness during the off-season is a huge, huge, and I got to move away from the mic, huge training mistake. Have I made it obvious enough how big of a mistake this is for you? Off-season is the time when you need to build your core. You need to build your foundation. You need to build, on the bike, your neuromuscular skills, your coordination, all right, so that you can improve your pedal stroke efficiency. You can take a look at my post on smoothing your pedal stroke to take a look at that. Every single one of my training plans that is involving a base period of any kind, whether it's my base module, whether it's my advanced base module, whether it's my bat and kill training plan, which, by the way, has taken people to the podium multiple years in a row, okay? This is the same plan that knocked more than 36 minutes off one person's time. 36 minutes! You know what the secret is to those training plans and why they work? It's because during the base phase, not only am I forcing you to try something different, but I am building fundamental cycling skills that you need to be faster and stronger and more resilient on the bike. That's what I'm there to do. That's what all of my plans do. Strength and fitness and fundamental strength for core is an entirely different story. All right? Everybody's a little different. As a practitioner and as a chiropractor, I'll take a little bit of a sidebar into this. I'm fascinated by the way people adapt to different injuries, different problems that they have, how their body compensates for a variety of things. And let me tell you, I see a lot of patients in my office, all right? Our office sees probably 250 patient visits a week. And I can pretty much tell you, any patient that walks in that door, not a single one of them has any functional core strength and stability. And I see a lot of athletes, folks. I see a lot of them. I see cyclists. I see triathletes. I see runners. I see gymnasts. I see tennis players. I see soccer players galore. I see football players. I see wrestlers. All these guys have all kinds of fitness, right? Not a single one of them has any freaking core stability and strength. And let me tell you, when you reevaluate them and reactivate that core and that functional component, it's night and day difference. So pretty soon I'll actually have a post or a podcast about this and some recommendations on this. However, it's something worth considering that your core should probably be anywhere between 15 and 25% of your off-season training. All right, when you start going back to your training, after you take a little time off, that should be the first thing that you start along with cycling fundamentals. So don't focus only on the cycling fitness, folks. I know I'm getting a little bit animated about it, but it's I'm so passionate about it because it actually works. I've seen the transformation and it's huge. Moving on to the next one. Take a bit of a breath there. Take a second for a sip of coffee here. That was myself a little bit worked up over that, but it's pretty important. Now, the next training mistake that I see a lot of people make, building up too fast, way too hard. And this ties into the previous two things here, especially the guy who doesn't want to stop training because he's afraid of losing his fitness. They tend to think that if I'm doing high intensity work and I'm getting some really great benefits, more must be better. That's entirely not the case. There is a limit of diminishing returns or a point of diminishing returns where more is not better. More will just wear you out and tire you out. Again, moderating your training is the key here. This is why I'm going to plug my programs and my training plans. They're great tools because they moderate your training. Yes, they are hard, but they are fair. And they're designed to progressively overload your system and create the necessary fitness and training adaptations that make you stronger, faster, and let you have more fun on the bike. All right. And again, start with your functional base training, add cycling from there. I'm going to get off that topic before I go on to another 10-minute rant about it. All right. And all right, finally here, the last off-season mistake I see so many people having is not having clear-cut goals. And I run into this so many times with consults. People who shoot me an email and they say, hey, you know, I really want to get strong next year so I can do well on group rides. Okay. When? What time of year? May? July? September? When? These are the guys that don't have a race. They don't have a Fondo. They don't have a Century. They don't have any self-imposed goal with any kind of time limit attached to it. Okay? And again, when I say goals, don't misunderstand me here. This is the beginner that a lot of people will hear. A lot of people will hear, oh, I need a goal. I must need to be a racer. You don't need to be a racer to have a goal. Being a racer does not make you an intermediate cyclist. It does not make you an advanced cyclist. Not being a racer does not make you a beginner. Being a beginner makes you a beginner. Not having clear-cut goals is one of the biggest mistakes I see, both from beginners, intermediates, and advanced cyclists. It just happens that way. All right. And again, it doesn't have to be a race. It can be a Gran Fondo. Gran Fondo, New Jersey, for a number of my clients, huge goal. Gran Fondo, New York. Huge goal. Levi's Gran Fondo, great big goal. Charity rides, big goals. Maybe it's the MS 150. Maybe it's the Vermont Six Gap. All right? Big goals. Maybe it's a self-imposed goal. Maybe you want to do the longest day ride. Here in New Jersey, the longest day ride, they ride from the northern tip of Jersey down to Cape May. It's about 200 or so miles. It's a long ride. Maybe that's your goal. But you have to have a goal. I mentioned group rides earlier. You could even have group rides as your goal, but you need a target date. Here's the key to it. And if you go back to my Setting Smart Goals podcast, you'll understand why this is such a key. The biggest part of having a solid and sufficient goal is being under a time constraint. If you're not under a time constraint, you have no reason to reach that goal. You can always put it off till tomorrow. I want to get faster for group rides, and I know I should go out and I should go do those VO2 max intervals, but I just really don't feel like doing it today. Sound familiar? Should, because I deal with it a lot. I hear a lot of people do that. Versus, I'm racing the Tour of the Battenkill in the second weekend of May. I guess I better get out there and do those VO2 max hill repeats. I don't want to get embarrassed at that. Sound a little different? Because now you have a set end date that you have to work within. And there's a time frame where you have to work within as well. And that is the key to setting a clear-cut, smart goal. Again, take a look at my smart goal-setting podcast. I don't remember what number it is off the top of my head. It's going back there, probably 20 or 30 episodes. But it's definitely worth a listen, or checking out the podcast show notes at least. It's worth noting here when we're talking about having clear-cut goals, especially for beginners. We've talked about functional threshold power here in the past ad nauseum. I've talked about how functional threshold power is not the end-all be-all of your definition, and it's not the end-all be-all defining feature of you as a cyclist. I'm going to say this now, as I've said before, hunting numbers for a goal is really a bad idea. It's really, really a bad idea, especially if you put it to a time constraint. Because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I could set a goal of, for myself, I want to, next season, I want to hit a functional threshold of 350 watts. Okay? I want to see on my power meter for an FTP test, I want to see 350 watts. All right? And if I see 350 watts, let me do a little bit of math here. I'm going to grab my phone here. 160 pounds divided by 2.2. So I'm 72.7 kilos. If I did 350 watts divided by 72.7 kilos, I'd be putting out 4.8 watts per kilo at threshold. Great. Sounds like a great goal, right? Let me tell you something. I highly doubt my body would even be able to do 350 watts at threshold. It's just not designed to do that. My body makeup is more designed for a fast twitch, short duration rider, a crit racer, a track racer. It's not designed to hold 350 watts for an hour. There's a reason I hate time trialing, folks, and that's it. So setting numbers, it doesn't matter what date I set or how hard I work, I'm set up for disappointment if that's my goal. And the same will apply to you too. All right, and this is a beginner trap. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. This is a huge beginner trap that so many people get a power meter and they become a slave to the power meter and go, dude, it's all about the numbers. I got to hit 300 watts. No, you don't. You need to perform with whatever power output you have. Sure, seeing that power output go up is great. It's wonderful to see that. It's really gratifying to say, geez, I went up from 220 to 250 watts in 6 weeks. Super great. Good for you. I love that. How do you use it? Can you use it to win? Dude, I went from 250 to 300 watts. Did you win? Did you finish your century in under 4 hours? Did you finish your Grand Fondo in the top 10? Did you crush your group ride? Numbers don't matter, folks. I've said it before, I can say it until the end of time. Numbers don't matter. They're not a good goal. It's too unpredictable. And really, without really significant, really advanced physiological testing, you will not know what your body is capable of. So setting a number and hoping to get there only sets you up for disappointment. So do not set a number, an FTP number, as a goal. Just don't do it. Again, a huge beginner trap, a huge trap that I see from intermediate and advanced cyclists as well. one other point of note about clear-cut goals. One of the things I see a lot of times here is setting your season goals way too early. All right? And this may seem diametrically opposed to what I talk about in my Setting Smart Goals podcast and many of the other things that I've written. But hear me out here. Setting your specific season goals too early. I'm going to contend that when you're setting up your calendar and you're going through and going, well, let's see, you know, this one, this is going to be my A race, and this Gran Fondo, I'm going to use this Gran Fondo as an A race. So right before it, there's a time trial, and that's a B race. And then there's a century the week before that. That's going to be a B event. So I'm going to try and get a slow down. It's October 7th when I'm recording this. I'm getting requests from people for consults to plan their seasons now. It's October 7th, folks. Guys, this season's not even over yet. Okay? Cyclocross season's still going on. In fact, outdoor riding season's still going on. It was 77 degrees today, for Christ's sakes. Pardon the language again. Really, there goes my non-explicit rating on iTunes. It was 77 degrees today. It was beautiful. I was pouring sweat today. The season's not over. At this point in the season, and pretty much until December, unless, of course, you have a really early season goal. Now, for those of you who are racing Tour of the Battenkill, it used to be in April. You had to start your training around Thanksgiving. I'm not talking about that. That's very obvious. You have to have that season goal set for you well in advance. Otherwise, you're screwed in terms of your training. But for those of you who have goals of racing, say, a criterium season or a road race season starting in May, June, July, most of the racing here in the Northeast area, you're talking June, July, a little bit into August. If that's your season, why are you planning it now? Set your general fitness goals now. Set your general season-long fitness goals. Here's a great fitness goal. Build yourself a really solid functional base that won't deteriorate by the time you hit July. All right? Set those basic goals, those basic fitness goals now. And then, as you start to develop your fitness, as the races start to get posted, as the Gran Fondo dates start to get posted, as the charity ride dates start to get posted, as the MS-150 date comes out, the Vermont Six Gap date comes out, the D2R2 date, as those are put on the calendar, once you have that, then you can work backwards. Set your A races, I'm going to say races for lack of a better discussion, because that's how I plan my season, but a race could be an event, it could be a charity ride, it could be the MS-150, it could be anything, it could be the Dirty Kanza, it could be, you know, a ride that you go out and do with your friends after the first stage of the Tour de France. I could give a crap what it is, all right? But it's a goal to you, and that's what matters. Work backwards. Set your A event, your A goal. Set your B goal. Set your C goals. And then adapt your training. Plan your training around those goals. But know that you've already gotten your season fitness goals in place, and you're already working on them. All right. Those are the fundamentals that we talked about, the cycling fundamentals, the strength fundamentals, the core fundamentals. Those are what we talked about. Those should be your general fitness goals. Those should be what you're setting now for next season. You shouldn't be looking at races and fondos and events and things like that, yet they're not even posted yet. Sure, you can guess, but that's not good enough, really. It's not good enough for building a season. You got to be able to do it right the first time. So not having clear-cut goals, a huge training mistake, a huge beginner's training mistake, as well as a huge advanced and intermediate cyclist training mistake. Something that you really need to take a look at. So I know this podcast has run a little bit long. I know we're at about an hour and 4 minutes, which is longer than most of my podcasts, but covered a lot of material here. Again, I encourage you, take a look at the episode show notes, tailwind-coaching.com/64. There's a lot of great info there. There's a lot of great links to a lot of things that I mentioned in here. And I really encourage you to sit back, put some thought into yourself, into your training, into your riding, into your racing, into your fitness. See if you're making these mistakes. And I challenge you, take at least one of the things that I mentioned in this podcast, because I'm almost 100% certain that every single person that I'm talking to will have at least something that I mentioned in this podcast that they do, that they make mistakes in. Take the tips that I gave and just give it a shot. See how it changes your fitness. See how it changes your training. See how it changes your riding. See how it changes your racing and your events. I challenge you to do it. I'm pretty sure you will really be happy with the results if you do. Folks, I'm going to punch out. I'm going to let you go until next time. Until next time, ride strong, ride fit, ride happy, ride on the dirt. I have to throw that in there. And of course, ride strong, ride functionally strong too. No, I'm not going to get back into that. Keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, and I will be talking to you again really, really soon.